make a deal with Netflix and you don't have money that comes into you forever. You get paid and then money 20% more or 30% more, but that's it.
It didn't come natural to me. There's so many things that I think about now I wish I had known when I was younger.
What I believe resonates with people who are particularly now is content that has some sort of meaning to it. It's more than just pure entertainment.
And so suddenly MTV was the only thing, it seemed, in the whole world, and all of Hollywood and everybody else was taking their cues from this startup.
I did not know a single writer when I became a writer. I think if you're trying to become a writer from someplace other than Los Angeles and New York, I still think that's really difficult.
Welcome to Entertainment Business Wisdom with your host, Kaya Alexander.
Welcome. I'm Kaya Alexander, the host of Entertainment Business Wisdom. Our special guest today, so close to my heart, I'm so excited to tell you about him. He's a Renaissance man, fellow Scorpio like me, and fairy god stylist. He's a champion equestrian. He worked for Ralph Lauren for many years before starring in the Emmy-winning show Queer Eye, the OG Queer Eye. Also actor, host, and judge of RuPaul's Drag Race, and he's an author. Carson, I loved your book. Does this book make my butt look big? Welcome, Carson Kressley.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having the book. That's great. I hope you enjoy it.
I love your book. I love your book.
Thank you.
I made discoveries in your book. We both shop the children's section at various stores because I'm a very old person. And I was like, oh my God, I don't have to feel guilty about this anymore, Carson.
No, that's one of my secret weapons. It's getting harder because I'm slowly moving out of the boys' extra, extra large, but it still works in a pinch. And it's a great little tip. If you can do it, it's a great way to save money.
It is. I love that, learning that about you, that you shop intelligently about getting those deals. And I felt like that was so relatable because when I see you on TV, you're always so glamorous and wearing your Tom Ford suits and everything. And then I was like, oh my God, he shops the way that we do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love to shop. And I love the thrill of the hunt. And I'm a total maxinista and I'm not their spokesperson, but I love an outlet mall. I love a bargain. And then I think it was Frank Lloyd Wright who said he would gladly forego the necessities to afford the luxuries. And I do that. Like I buy cheap underwear at TJ Maxx so I can buy a Tom Ford jacket at the outlet, of course, because I am on cable. I am not loaded. I try to be thrifty when I can so I can spend money on more fun things.
Love that. Yeah. It's like, I have the simplest of tastes. I only prefer the best. I love
exactly.
That. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you've done so much. I'm curious to hear from you what you're the most proud of.
Oh gosh. Career wise, I mean, I think, I'm proud of a couple different things. I mean, I loved my time at Ralph Lauren and, I worked there. It's been over 20 years ago, which is so weird. Like, I still feel like I'm like 16 and I still think like, oh my God, I have a car. I can go to the mall. I have a credit card. Like, that's always like, I wake up and I'm like, I can do whatever I want, kind of, which is shocking to me. But now that I am older, now I'm saying things like I worked at Ralph Lauren 25 years ago. And I recently had like a holiday lunch with my old boss, who was fantastic. And, I just was telling her, you know, that was such a valuable experience for me, for my career working at Ralph Lauren. And I'm very proud of the work I did there. We did amazing ads and some of them are still like in the stores today. Like, you know, some, you know, gorgeous kid holding a stack of polo shirts, you know, for Father's Day. They still use some of the images that we created 25 years ago, in their stores and in different ads. So
unusual. That's amazing.
Yeah, very proud of that work. I loved it there and I learned so much. It was like the best entrepreneurship school, the best taste school. You know, I learned about urgency because fashion, you know, in that business is all about, you know, what's new, what's next, keep it moving. I learned about details that helped me so much in showbiz, doing makeover shows, especially, you know, we would style somebody and they'd say, that's good. It's only for camera. I'm like, no, no, no. It's got to be perfect. And they've got to feel that it's perfect or else we're not going to like achieve our purpose. And that's going to show on camera. So very proud of working at Ralph Lauren, learned so much there. And then in showbiz, I mean, there are a couple of shows. I mean, Queer Eye obviously was a huge career maker. It was the first TV show I ever did. I had no idea I even was going to work in TV. And the most important thing about that is not winning an Emmy, which I'm shocked I have one. I felt guilty because like Susan Lucci was trying for like 15 years and then I got one right out of the gate and I was like, sorry. But what I'm most proud of is that that show was a dialogue starter in so many different communities. And especially, you know, I'll still be traveling. I'll be in an airport or on a plane and, you know, maybe the flight attendant's like 30 and he's like, oh my gosh, I watched your show and I was 15 and I was able to have a conversation about my being gay with my family. And it made it so much easier because of your show. And I'm just like, that always gives me goosebumps and makes me very, very proud. So that's the most important thing. And then fast forward 20 years later, I get to work on RuPaul's Drag Race, which, you know, was the little show that could and started out very small. And now it's a global platform. And I think the most winningest show, reality show of Emmys in the history of television, which is like unbelievable. And, but again, the most important thing about that show is that all over the world in, you know, in Zaire and New Brunswick and Finland and Bolivia, young people can see usually marginalized people being celebrated and saying, oh my gosh, you're an artist. You're amazing. Tell us your story. We want to shine a light on you. We want you to be successful. And that platform, RuPaul's Drag Race, I'm very proud of because it does allow kids all over the world to perhaps see themselves on TV and feel included and feel empowered and feel like they can just be themselves, which is the best thing in the world. So very proud of those three things and lots of other ones too.
I love that. I love what you said about, you know, being able to see yourself on TV, especially from a marginalized community, what that does. I'm bi and queer, and we don't even see a lot of characters on TV. But when we do, there's just an echo for me in my heart of, oh my God.
Right.
You know, and it's very powerful and it like goes past anything intellectual at that level. It just goes straight to the heart. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. And it's so important. And I think, you know, we're slowly getting there. With visibility and making sure that, you know, people can see themselves in media. It's so important.
So important. Tell me the story of how you got the job at Ralph Lauren.
Oh, how I got the job at Ralph Lauren was had a job. I went to Gettysburg College. I loved it. I moved to New York City like the day after graduation in 1991. And I had a job working for a nonprofit, which was great. And it was a good job. And I thought I was, you know, I thought I was making a fortune, but then I, you know, figured, you know, I found out how much rent was in New York City. And I was like, I have no extra money. So after doing that for about 3 years, I was like, I would love to have money for food and shoes. Is that possible?
Hashtag life goals, you know?
Right. So I started looking and I know this is a business centered podcast as well. And this is not what you should do probably, but I had a liberal arts degree. So I was good at communicating and good at writing and I was organized. And but I didn't really have a whole bunch of, you know, I couldn't go be a dental hygienist or a lawyer. Or I didn't have any real solid, you know, skills. So I made a list of places I would like to work based on just because they sounded cool. And I thought they had a great corporate culture and they sounded exciting, and they were based in New York City. And most of them, I'd be walking around, and I was like, oh, MGM has an office here. I should work there. Or Disney, which I thought was a great company. Calvin Klein was very hot in the 90s, so it's like I could work there. And Ralph Lauren had always been on my radar. I always loved the brand, their branding, their storytelling, the lifestyle. It was just, you know, I'm an 80s kid. So growing up, I mean, my first suit was polo from Bam Burgers in Allentown. So I always, you know, found them to be the pinnacle of what I thought was chic. So they made my list. And I started sending some resumes out. But one day, and this is the power of serendipity, I was at the gym and I didn't really even go there to work out. I went there to like meet guys. And I had a cute outfit on. I had Black Watch plaid track pants. And I had a gray sweatshirt with a teddy bear wearing Black Watch plaid clothing, holding a Black Watch plaid basketball. And then I was also holding the Black Watch plaid basketball that you got from buying $75 or more of fragrance at Bloomingdale's. And I had my whole getup like a lunatic.
And I was
at the front desk chit-chatting. Okay. Yeah. And then somebody came in and she said, oh my gosh, who are you? You know, you're like, you know, you're so Ralph Lauren, you should work there. And I was like, oh, I should. And she said, I'm a headhunter. I work with them. We should get you in there. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is my Lana Turner at Schwab's drugstore soda fountain counter moment. And I said, sure. And I went in and I remember the woman who interviewed me. Her name was Christian Dubuque. And I had a very cute Ralph Lauren outfit on because I owned a lot of that merchandise. And she's like, wow, you really seem to get it. I said, yeah, I understand that it's, you know, it's merchantainment. It's like, you know, of course we're selling things, but we're also like selling a lifestyle and telling a story and entertaining people. I think she liked the word merchantainment. She's like, okay, you're pretty sassy. And I got a job being Jerry Lauren's assistant. And he was, Ralph Lauren's brother. And he ran the men's company, still works there. He's 86. I saw him a couple, like a year or two ago. And it was great. It was like the Devil Wears Prada. I had to do everything. Like, you know, I had to go buy sardine sandwiches and go buy shampoo and ride around in a black town car and go different places. I thought it was great. And everyone was really nice and very preppy. And then I got to work with Ralph. And he'd be like, oh, I love what you're wearing. And I was like, oh my God, Ralph Lauren likes what I'm wearing. And then I just worked my way up. And being an assistant to somebody who's very high up in the company was great because I got to interface with so many parts of the business. And I didn't really know how a giant fashion, global fashion brand worked and the licensee system. So I got to meet the people that made the eyewear and the people that made the shoes. These were all different companies that licensed the Ralph Lauren name, but needed their approval. So I would, you know, schedule time for all these different people to meet with Jerry or Ralph and review socks and golf and tennis and Purple Label and men's sportswear and home collection. So I really got a great education and I did that for a couple years. And then I was like, Jerry, I'd really love to work in design. And he's like, absolutely. So then I started in golf and tennis and I worked into men's sportswear. And then I eventually started doing all of their advertising, their cooperative advertising, which is back in the day when there were lots of department stores. And I don't know, where are you from? What's your hometown? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Pacific Palisades, which is like little suburb of LA. Back when it was still a mom and pop community and I had horses. Right. Tanga and stuff like that.
Oh my God, amazing. Well, your store would have been Robinson's May.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, in Santa Monica.
And I would go there and I'd work with Robinson's. And if you lived in Florida, I would work with Burdine's. And if you were in Boston, it was Foley's. There were so many independent stores. I did all of their Ralph Lauren-based advertising. So I got to travel and it was great. I got to work with a lot of cute models. And it was a really good job. And that's what led to Queer Eye eventually.
You love learning. And that's what I'm hearing here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, I'm very game for new experiences and taking a bit of a risk and enjoying the ride, so to speak.
Was there, because you're also really creative, was there a time for you when you started to feel like, oh, I could also be express my creativity here? Did that come early for you or did you grow into that?
I definitely grew into that. And I think sometimes when you work for a big established brand like Ralph Lauren, there's such an aesthetic that's already established. When you're a newbie and you're like 22 years old, you're like, well, I'm not going to, you know, tell them how to do anything. I felt like I was a little bit, I don't want to say stifled because no one put that on me, but I felt shy about expressing my creativity. But then when I got to work in design and even more so in advertising and creating these beautiful images, that's where I got to really shine. And I loved, going on location and picking the spot and, selecting the models and choosing the merchandise, of course, with, you know, Ralph and everyone's blessing, and making that kind of inanimate thing, whether it was a shirt or a sweater or a jacket or a whole look, come to life and tell a gorgeous story. And, you know, it was back in the days of film and we had Polaroids, like official, like not regular Polaroids, but like photographers would set the shot up and then take a picture with their very professional Polaroid. And it was like a long skinny and we would shake it and be like, okay, this is it. The lighting is good. And then we would actually shoot on film, which seems so insane and so archaic. But I swear it was only about 25 years ago.
That's amazing. I know the kids today, they don't even know how to load those cameras.
No.
So as we talk about like your journey through business, you've been working a long time. You clearly have a strong work ethic. You work a lot. What advice would you give your younger self from all that you've learned now?
Oh, gosh. Don't wear those parachute pants. That's the first tidbit. I think I would probably tell my younger self to relax a little bit and exhale. And I'm always worried about like what's next. And sometimes you just have to let it happen and have faith in your ability, your experience, your network, the universe, that it's going to be okay. But that's one thing. The other thing that I would say is good job on saying yes to a lot of different things, because I was so envious of friends of mine in college who were like, I want to be a dental hygienist. And like, I'm going to go to school and then I'm going to do this and I'm going to have this path. And then like, 4 years, I'm going to be doing my job. I was just like, I don't know what I want to do. And I would tell my younger self, you don't have to know. Sometimes you follow the path and it takes you to where you're supposed to be. And I was always really fixated on having this linear, like, I'm going to be a doctor. So I do this, this, and this, and then I become a doctor. Like, I always craved that kind of roadmap. And I never had it. And it was fine anyway. So that's what I would tell my younger self.
So relate to that. I haven't had the roadmap either. And always kind of had that envy of my friends who knew what they wanted to be when they grew up, when they were 8 and like, right. And they became that person. And, you know, now they're retired or retiring or whatever. And they've had that one path. And mine has right. Definitely been more, more broad and varied and interesting. You know, I think I maybe always knew I wanted to become a writer, but you also got to live to have anything to say. And I mean, I'm glad right. I've been maybe more through the blackberry bushes than out on the road, but.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm thrilled. It's so much, I think probably more fun and exciting this way.
I agree. I completely agree. Well, what has fame taught you?
Oh my gosh. That's a great question. And nobody's ever asked me that. Gosh, what would I say to that? I think it's taught me graciousness and being open. And some people would probably say the opposite and be like, I want to go hide in my bushes and like, you know, behind a fence and not let anyone see me. But it's, for me, it's a very different experience because I became famous basically because of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. And it's a very unique set of circumstances, because the thing that I was probably most ashamed of, or trained by society to be ashamed of, was my sexuality, and trying to hide it, and, you know, and not be as flamboyant or as out as I should have been. That thing was the thing that actually became celebrated on Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, which was a real like mind trip. It was just like, wait a minute, like 3 years ago I was, you know, getting like, you know, called a fag or something like at the mall, and now like 3 years later people are like, oh my god, you're that guy from Queer Eye. And I was like, what is going on here? It's just, I've only just been on TV, but I'm the same person. So it has, so to answer your question, that fame part has taught me that people perceive you differently than perhaps you perceive yourself, and that a thing that you think might be a flaw is actually something that a lot of people admire and celebrate. So it really opened me up to, I think, living more authentically and being more self-confident. So it was a real blessing in that way. And I've heard, you know, other celebrities say like, oh, you know, fame is such a burden. For me, not really. Like, I think it's helped me be more myself. And also, you usually get a better table at a restaurant. You know, they're like, wait a minute, I know you right this way. We'd love having you at Arby's. And I'd say, thank you.
Well, as you navigated your life with like a lot of grace, I'm curious your journey of like, now you've been on television a lot early for you. Did you ever get nervous? Did you develop rituals of how to handle, now I'm going to be on camera? Because it sounds like with Ralph Lauren, you were, you know, on the other side of the camera. Right.
And then honestly, it's you know, making that first show, I remember our producers and our director gave us this like visualization technique where they're like, you know, before you go on camera, imagine you're just like walking around a swimming pool and you're getting focused. And I was like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I was like, I can't pretend I don't even have a swimming pool. So I would just, you know, my secret is just, be in the moment. And I know it's easier to say than to do. But the first series, Queer Eye, I was so busy just working and doing what I do that I forgot about being on camera. And that's the best way to be for someone like me, who's, I'm not an actor. I mean, it's on my resume, but I'm not very good at it. And I'm just better when the cameras are rolling and I'm just being natural. And they sift through and they find the kernels that work. But yeah, it was more nerve-wracking, I think, when you had to do like live television. Like, oh, we're going to be on the Today Show. And, you know, it's that the red light is blinking. And I kept thinking about like Cindy Brady when she went on the game show and, you know, couldn't remember the capital of Louisiana. It was Baton Rouge. But it hasn't, knock on wood, I still get nervous. And I think actually I grew up showing horses, and that was also like a high pressure. Like you work and work and work and work and work for like months and years. And then you literally have like 3 minutes to like go and not mess up what you've been working on for forever. So I know that kind of mental pressure. And I think growing up showing horses and being like, listen, I've worked, I've prepared, I know what I'm doing. And if it doesn't work out because of, you know, bad luck or whatever, I'm not going to die, probably. So I've kept that kind of mantra in the back of my mind, even with TV. So the horse world and being in that environment has been helpful in so many different ways.
Oh, interesting. I grew up showing too. I was a hunter jumper and, you know, mostly in Southern California, but like the incredible pressure. I had a trainer who was also really intense and even added pressure onto the pressure. There were so many pieces of it that I really loved, like when everything came together and you could relax into the moment and you just knew you were on and the horse was on and you were just having the moment that was working. Like I lived for that feeling, and it's a lot of work to be able to come to a place where it feels effortless. There's so much work that goes into that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think every great artists, whether they're a singer or a dancer, or if you're an athlete and an equestrian, certainly is, you put in so many hours that people don't see to make it look easy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. It is so true. So my audience is a lot of above the line creatives. They're writers, producers, directors. A lot of them are just starting out. Do you have any advice for them?
My best piece of advice for showbiz in general, and it served me really well, I think, has been an attitude of saying yes. And I will get offers to do something that sounds awful and maybe like an agent or something like, oh, you don't need to do this or whatever. But I'm just like, oh no, that sounds like fun. If it sounds like fun and they're going to pay me, I usually say yes. And so many times that has led to another opportunity that was really wonderful. For example, there was this show called Skin Wars, and it was about body painting, and it was on the Game Show Network. And a friend of mine was working there and said, you should do this show. And it was like, you know, it wasn't much money. And I was like, I'm not really into body painting, but okay, it sounds kind of fun. And I remember I got there, it was shooting in Mar Vista at some beautiful studio. And they put me in my little dressing room. And there was one of those TVs that has a DVD player built into it. Like a one unit thing, like a boom box, but a little TV with a DVD player. And all these movies like Clueless and Legally Blonde, all of my favorites. And I was like, I wonder why that's there. And then they came in, they're like, we should get your lunch and dinner order. I was like, dinner? No. They said I'm going to be done by 12. And I was like, I don't even want lunch. I said, well, just, you know, this is like at 8 in the morning. And they said, no, you're going to be done at 12 tonight. And I was like, what? So it really wasn't a good payday because I was there for like days. Because you have to wait a long time till people body paint 10 people to look like an aisle of a grocery store, and it takes forever. And they didn't want me to leave Mar Vista, so I was stuck there. But it was on that show that was hosted by Rebecca Romaine and RuPaul, who was a permanent judge on that show. And he said to me on that set, hey, why haven't you done my show? And I said, I would love to. And he said, let's make it happen. So that's where an 8-year-long relationship on RuPaul's Drag Race came from. A show that some people said, oh, you don't need to do that or whatever. I didn't think it was going to be like life-changing, but it was in its own way. So say yes to those opportunities. And also like relationships. It's so important. Show business is so small. And you think it's this big giant world and like Paramount Pictures and NBC Universal, these giant companies. But I find that I work with the same people all the time. And for good or for bad, like sometimes you're like, oh no, that person I don't like is now running, you know, all reality TV at Viacom, what? Or whatever, you know, sometimes. So be nice to everybody, have great relationships, because people are always going to be, you're going to run into them again, is what I'm saying. It's always great to build great relationships. It's a very, very small world. And I try not to burn any bridges. And even if it's not a great experience, I say, well, we're going to, you know, figure out how to learn from this and keep it positive, because it is, like I said, very, very small.
Absolutely. And that feeds back into your reputation, which is right. Which is so important.
Yeah. I think you always want to be, my mantra has been like, you know, do your homework. And, you know, I kind of try to do everybody's job. Like if you show up and you're so prepared and you've kind of like done what the writer wanted you to do, and you've done what the director wants you to do, or you've done what the producer wants to do, or you bring the ideas and say, oh, I'll help you produce this segment. If you make everybody's life easier, and we all know that showbiz is so hard and that you're there for like so many hours and everybody's doing probably more than they should be doing, especially now. If you can come in and be easy breezy and make everybody else's job easier, you are like on set gold. They're like literally calling your people before you leave, like, when can he come back? And I try to do that everywhere if I can.
Being a giver like that. I've been teaching my students in the entertainment business school the value of building those relationships, making friends. It can be intimidating for some of them who are more introverted, like the writers, to be like, wait a minute, half of my job is relationships. What are you talking about? And it's like, yeah, it's literally half your job.
Yes. I think that's more of an important part than people realize. And I think young people especially think like, oh, I'm going to be a writer. So I just, you know, I'm going to be in my room at home and I'm going to write great stories and I never have to really like relate to other people. No. And the same.
I was going to be like, a broke writer.
Yeah. Or like, I always thought, oh, it'd be great to be a realtor. You know, you just show beautiful houses and I'm really into design. And then I had a partner who was a realtor and he was like, no, it's, you basically have to go to like Lions Club meetings and church and like interact with your community and be the person everyone thinks of when they think real estate. You have to be such a relationship person. And you're so right. It's the same in Hollywood and in the creative space. It's a small world. We all know everybody. And having good people skills. I never like to schmooze. Like for me, it felt inauthentic. And I thought, oh, I shouldn't even be doing this. Like I shouldn't go to parties or whatever when there were parties and be out there. And schmoozing sounds so like cheap and schmaltzy and bad. But networking is a great word. And it's so important to be out there, to be meeting people and to be seeing people and building a professional network. Because you want to be top of mind. And when people are thinking, oh, I need a writer for this project, or, oh, I need an actor, or, oh, I need a, you know, hair person. You want people to think of you and you have to be out there for them to make that connection.
Absolutely. And that mind share is small. Those lists can be really small. So yeah, being top of mind is so key to working and continuing to work and doing what you love to do.
Absolutely.
What are you most passionate about right now?
Right now, I feel like the pandemic and working in showbiz, I'm just so happy to work, you know, when there are opportunities and it's like, oh, you're going to do this series, you're going to do that. I'm just like, praise the Lord. I'm just happy that we're filming.
No doubt.
So I feel like I haven't gotten to the luxury level of like, what would I love to do? But I think I'm most passionate about design. And I feel like I always have been, but I'm really, I think even the pandemic, maybe part of it is that I'm really focused on home and making it nice, as Dorinda would say, and creating beautiful spaces where people can live and work. And I've dabbled in interior design before, and I did a show on Bravo with Tom Felicia called Get a Room. And I really loved that. So I'm just really into interior design right now. And I would love to parlay that perhaps into another television opportunity where I can, you know, be designing things and creating. I love that experience of like taking nothing and turning it into something beautiful. That's like very fulfilling for me. So I want to do more of that.
Love that. I hear you love antiquing. Is that a piece of it?
Yeah. I mean, I love collecting and I love treasure hunting. And I just think, you know, antiques have so many stories and layers and patina, and old stuff is generally so much better than like, you know, stuff that's made today when it comes to furniture and lighting and rugs and all that stuff. So yeah, I love it. There's a couple big antique fairs. Round Top, Texas is one of them. And I was doing a show for Food Network called Barbecue Brawl, second season coming out in May.
Yay.
And I got to go to Round Top because it was kind of not far from Austin where we were filming. And I went like every day for like any day that I wasn't working. They're like, where were you? I was like, oh, I was at the antiques fair again. And we were kind of like not supposed to like be out and about that much. But I was like, it's outside. It's very healthy. And, I just lived for it. And, every once in a while, I'm just like, maybe I should open my own online antiques business. And they're like, no, you have to pack that stuff and bubble wrap it and send it to people. And I hate sending stuff. Like, I don't know how sending stuff really works. I, you know, going to UPS is like boggles my mind. I don't know how they come and get it, like who you call. Like, it's not that complicated, but I'm not good at shipping.
Yeah, maybe that business is not the right one.
Probably not. I need a helper.
You need a helper. You need all the helpers. What kind of things did you find when you were at the antique fair there?
Well,
Tell me what you fell in love with.
I do love gift giving. And I think I love giving things that people I think are going to be delighted by. And RuPaul has actually told me, he's like, you're the best gift giver. And I said, oh, I really enjoy giving gifts. And one of the things I found at Round Top, which I highly recommend if anybody's into it, it's a must to go spring or fall. And you can look them up at like roundtopantiquesfair.com or something. But this past time I found there was a woman there who sold only like 1950s, 30s, 40s, and 50s vintage barware. So like she had, you know, beautiful like ice bucket that said like the 19th hole on it, and then like glasses, highball glasses that all had golfers on it, and very, very cute. So whatever you're into. Well, she also had one that was all antique. It was in like a 1950s racehorse theme. So it had like Seabiscuit and famous horses on it. It was very stylized. And Bobby Flay, who I was doing the show with at the time, is really into horse racing and has a couple race horses. And so I got that for him as like a, you know, wrap gift. And he was like, oh my God, this is incredible. It's so personal and beautiful. Because he also likes a cocktail or two. So it was very well suited. So I got that. And then I also love like repurposed clothing, and there were vintage army jackets, which are very cool. But this woman who was an artist, she had taken pieces of Hermes scarves and put them, appliqued them onto the back or onto the cuffs. And I just thought they were the greatest thing ever. So I got one of those.
That's so you. Yeah. I remember you used to do that on Queer Eye, where you would like go into someone's wardrobe, find a piece that was like really personal to them. And then you would, you know, maybe put it into the back of a jacket, and it was.
Right. Yeah. I would totally do that. Or maybe like create a bedspread out of like football jerseys that people shouldn't be wearing, but you can do other things with. So I got that. I usually get things that are, you know, either gifts for other people. Rarely I will buy furniture, and it's easier to ship it than you would think. So that was a phobia I got past. And then sometimes I'll just buy, a souvenir, and it could be, you know, like a cocktail shaker or I got some mint julep glasses that had my monogram, like just a K on them, which I thought were great. And I always think about the trip, and I think about making that show and all the fun times we had on set. So, there's a lot of fun things that antiquing can bring besides just, you know, stuff for your house.
Yeah, I love that, especially for giving gifts. It's always nice to do something unique for people in an industry that's like, oh, another fruit basket, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, something different. So in my school, one of the things that I teach my students is how to gather a wolf pack. Like the people who are closest to you, who you trust, who you can talk to, who you can bounce ideas off of, often other industry professionals. Who would you say is in your wolf pack right now?
Oh, wow. That's a great, great idea and great question. Well, I have in my wolf pack, I have like my couple of best friends that I've had since moving to New York in 1991. It's miraculous, and I don't know how it happens, but it's been my experience, and I've heard from others that you just kind of find your people within the first like 6 months or so. And I think in New York, we're all so smushed together that you find your people a little faster than maybe you find them in LA, where you're a little bit more separated and in your car. So I have some of the OGs, my best friends that, you know, I grew up with, like two or three, and literally I'll be like, oh, they asked me to do this project. What do you think? And they're just good. Even though they're not in the industry, they know me really well. And they're just candid advice givers. And that's great. And then I would say, you know, people I did Queer Eye with, Tom Felicia, we still do a lot of work together. So he's a great sounding board and has great business acumen and great taste. I've had the same manager for about I don't know, 25 years. And that's a very like simpatico relationship where like he understands me, I understand him. We have a great shorthand. And so he's definitely in there. Yeah, I would say, you know, so a couple of agents, and mostly, you know, just good friends who know me more than they know the industry.
That makes a lot of sense. Those people you trust and you have history and it goes back.
Right.
It's really meaningful. Yeah, the industry can make you, you know, can be distortive, I guess, you know, that lens of like, what's happening? And then COVID on top of it, I've had a
right
lot of like being turned around a few times. And, you know, some of my closest friends go back many, many decades, even to my childhood, and reaching out and going like, hey, what's happening for you? Like one of my closest friends was a rigger in New York forever for his whole career, and, you know, lifting pianos up and down the sides of buildings. And like, he's the most real person, my friend Jack. And I know I can always get a read on reality talking to him.
Right.
Value
yeah, his
advice.
Yeah. It's good to have people. Sharon Stone, who, is a friend-ish. She said a great quote one time. I don't know if it was in her book, which is actually really amazing.
The book was really amazing. The whole where she had the stroke and, oh my God, her memoir was incredible.
It's such a great book for anybody, showbiz or not. It's like, it's such so many great life lessons in that book. But I think she had said this like much earlier, like, always stay friends with the people you split a pizza with. You know, when you all had to pool your money to come up with your $9 or whatever, those are your diehards. And I've really taken that to heart. And I'm really just mostly friends with all of my close people, you know, from the early days in New York.
I love that. Isn't she also from Pennsylvania?
She is. Yeah, she's from Meadville. Which is in the western part of PA, but I always remind her that we're both, you know, glamorous, gorgeous products of Pennsylvania.
I love that. I worked for Gary Shandling for a couple of years, and I know that they were really close and spoke really fondly of one another.
Yeah, how cool. Gary Shandling was like just such a genius.
Totally. I mean, absolutely. He was the first person who ever thought I was funny. Yeah, I grew up in a family that really, really loved me, but
right.
Didn't necessarily connect to my sense of humor. So just had like no idea. And I'd hang out with Gary and tease him and crack a joke and be like, you're really funny. You should develop that. And it was
right.
Mind blowing. I was like, what? You can develop that? You know, it was
right.
A concept that I didn't even really understand, but got into writing more comedy and learning how to write comedy and everything.
Right. Amazing.
Oh, it's good experiences. So, okay, I want to give you a magic wand and you can do anything you want from here on. What's the next thing in front of you?
Oh, like career-wise, I can do anything?
Anything.
Well, I do have, I think this might have been also pandemic related, but I've been reading a lot and I have a couple great books that I've read that are non-traditional romances, you know, maybe like gay love stories, etc. And I just thought they were so great and wonderful. So I'm going to option them and I would love to produce them. Maybe you can help me write them.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think more of that, I love to create. And sometimes when you're on camera, you don't feel like you're creating as much. You're just there doing your thing. You're kind of, you know, just there that day. But I think writing and producing one of these movies would be incredible. And I don't need to win an Oscar or anything. I just want to be on like a Hallmark, you know, Christmas movie marathon, because I've been in some of those and they're super fun to make.
One of my friends is a Hallmark development exec, and she said that they're now more open to LGBTQ stories and to BIPOC stories. And I'm so proud of them for opening up.
We might have to package something. You can write and I'll produce and I don't know what, write as well. and we'll sell it to Hallmark. See, it's one of those moments where you say yes to something and it leads to something else.
To happen. I mean, we need those stories on screen. Our community,
yeah, absolutely,
have enough of them, and it should be on a mainstream channel like that. Even as
I agree.
Pitching stuff, there's kind of even still a sense of like, oh well, maybe you should do that on YouTube or somewhere that's, you know,
right,
not mainstream. And it's like, yeah, no. We've had,
yeah, no,
you know, Black Lives Matter and Me Too. And it's, you know, it's time to open up the storytelling. You know, I feel really passionately about that.
Absolutely. Because that's what's on in homes across America and the heartland. And, you know, I have the Hallmark channel on like all, like from Thanksgiving to,
oh my,
like,
God, me too.
And
on my television all the time. Yeah, and I always like feel so good walking in and out of the room, even if I'm not watching,
yeah,
it. It's like,
oh yeah, no, I don't even watch that much. I catch a glimpse of Lacey Chabert in like a knit hat. Right. And she's just met a guy that's obviously a prince of a small country. And I think, you know, little kids are watching this all over the country with their families. Like, and if they never see themselves, they would think, well, where am I? So I think more inclusion in that space would be really, really impactful, actually. You know,
actually,
you don't have,
yeah,
to... You don't have to be always, while it's great, you can be a little more subversive with your activism and find these little places where you can make things better.
Absolutely. Well, maybe just a little spinach sprinkled in the popcorn, right?
Right. Exactly.
Oh, I love that. You're so awesome. I've loved having you as a guest on the show. Thank you so much for being here. You want to share with everybody what they can watch right now, where they can see you, what's happening?
Yeah, we have a very new and exciting season of RuPaul's Drag Race. It's on every Friday night at 8 on VH1. And there's some other exciting things happening with that franchise that I can't yet say, but stay tuned and follow me on Instagram at Carson Kressley or Twitter. All of the socials at Carson Kressley. And then in the spring, another season of Barbecue Brawl on Food Network. And also something big coming up on network TV that I can't say, but it's happening very soon. So look for me on one of the big three in February.
Oh, exciting. Well, that's awesome. We'll be sure to follow Carson and get his book too. I loved your book.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. You can get it on Amazon. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Entertainment Business Wisdom. We invite you to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Please like, review, and share it with your friends and colleagues. Kaya Alexander can be reached on Twitter for your questions or comments at This Is Kaya. Get entertainment business career training, as well as a free special report, How to Pitch Anything in 1 Minute, at www.entertainmentbusinessleague.com. Thank you.